ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back into the Gary Sharp Show. Thank you so much for listening. However you are choosing to do that, be that on these wonderful 1620 Zone AM airwaves, 1620zone.com, or the 1620 Zone app, we thank you for that. And always, we thank this gentleman for taking some time to visit with us, the CFB professor, Adam McClintock. Adam, how are you today, bud?
Pretty good. Very excited about that.
You know, my man, I'm excited. I mean, I kind of have to find different ways to be excited about football with Nebraska not even being in a bowl game. But the layout and the storylines and everything that's going on in the CFP or in the college football playoffs, it's what I like about this. There's storylines galore. Jalen Hurts coming with Oklahoma after leaving Alabama. You got the potential for Joe Burrow and LSU versus Ohio State. And then, oh, by the way, everybody's forgetting about the reigning national champion Clemson, who is just laying in the lurch waiting to pummel everyone. So I'm excited for what's about to come. What are you looking forward to in this bowl/playoff season?
Man, I'm looking forward to that Clemson-Ohio State game. That's gonna be a knockdown drag.
Yeah.
I think, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, Clemson or Ohio State and LSU have kind of gotten all the attention, you know, the second half of the year because they've had some more marquee matchups and stuff and along that stretch, but everybody's kind of forgot about Clemson. And Clemson is they're not one you want to tangle with, especially in the playoff. You know, I think that became evident when you saw all the lobbying by LSU and Ohio State to be number one, because everybody wanted to kind of throw shade at the ACC, but nobody really wants a piece of Clemson. So I thought that was kind of funny to watch.
Well, there's something too. You know, Dabo takes it's probably why I like him so much. Is he takes disrespect and things that you have to kind of manufacture the disrespect out of, and he will get that to be, you know, you saw it last year in the championship game. They went out and pummeled Alabama, and I don't think Ohio State survives that. I think Clemson beats Ohio State in that game just out of the pure fact of spite. I think Clemson is going to be like, okay, you don't want to pay attention to us, get ready, because here comes all of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have actually Clemson modeled to win that game by two, so It's going to be a good game either way, especially if Justin Fields isn't able to be mobile like we saw earlier in the year. That's a big problem for Ohio State. I mean, I think we kind of saw a little bit of that in the Wisconsin game. And, you know, Clemson, you know, Wisconsin's got some guys up front, but Clemson's got some real guys up front that will really get out for Justin Fields. So Wisconsin sacks him five times. He might not finish the game against Clemson.
You know, that, yeah, and you bring that up because, you know, I was surprised. I wasn't surprised that Wisconsin was in it and they were doing what they were doing. I was maybe more let down in Ohio State's offensive line, who had played so well all year and then seemed to falter a little bit in that game. And if you do that, like you were saying, you know, Clemson will probably even tell you, their defensive line this year is good. It's not as great as it has been. It's going to get better next year. So this, if you're going to get Clemson, this might be the time to get them.
Oh, I know. They lost, four guys to the draft last year on the defensive line? You know, and I just marvel at some of these programs that can do that and maintain. I mean, it's mind-boggling to have that much talent waiting in the wings.
Yeah, and they have some monster. I mean, this kid coming out of high school, Husker Matt, the wrestling account here in the state, he sends me clips of this kid, and I'm scared. Just watch him, like, dude, I don't know how anybody's gonna. And this kid's like 18 or whatever he is. I'm like, Jesus, the rich get richer in that instance. The other side of that, though, I call it the Joe Burrow effect. Some guys just have that. Some guys, just when they walk on the field, they feel they know they're going to win. They may not win them all, but you at least have a chance to win every single one they're in. He was such a key storyline to me because I thought LSU had just been sitting on the edge all the time. They just couldn't, for some reason, get the offense figured out. The defense has always been good. Now they got a quarterback who's using all that great stable of receivers they have and their fantastic running back. LSU... I'm picking them to beat Oklahoma, and I'm picking them to maybe win it all.
Yeah, right now I got them beat Oklahoma by 8 points. I mean, I think it opened up at 10, and it's up to almost 13 now, I think, which I think might be a little bit too much, because then you kind of get the opposite effect of, you know, everybody's kind of treating the Oklahoma game as a bye week, you know, and they hear that too. They got athletes over Norman, so. I think the game maybe ends up being a little bit closer than the 10-point spread, but it's not going to be much closer. I think, you know, Joe Burrow, you matched him up with Joe Brady, who's their, you know, calling plays now, the ex-Saints passing game guy. He has really opened up that offense, and what a huge transformation. And that just kind of shows you what you know, if you have the talent in place, what one, you know, extra set of eyeballs can do to a staff, it completely changes things, completely changes the narrative and the outcome of everything involved in that program.
Well, it's, you know, once you get that talented leader or that talented gunslinger, it's amazing how much smarter offensive coordinators get when that happens.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's exactly right. That helps too.
Yeah, Deborah, I always feel a lot more comfortable when I coach, when I got about five offensive linemen that go about 240. I'm like, okay, we're gonna these guys are going to make me look pretty good here. I really appreciate you, fellas.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You know, and that's something that, you know, coming back to Nebraska, you know, these guys didn't forget how to coach. I see people all the time who are wanting heads for this year, and you know that's great. You know, fans are going to do what fans do, but you know, I'm glad there's some leveler heads up there, maybe in control of things, that are going to let this play out a little further, because you know these guys just didn't forget how to coach up there. I mean, they're going to get it figured out, but it's just, you know, they don't have maybe, you know, the things set in place yet to get them to wherever everybody wants them to get.
Well, that, you know, Scott and his crew they're in such an interesting position, because you know everybody, ideally you start out guns a-blazing and you just win. Well, reality isn't that, and now you've got the opportunity, right? I do think they held back a lot of guys, redshirted them, giving them another year, you know, off season or a bunch of practices, or getting them up to speed where they want, almost in a way where I'm can justify it in my brain to have two recruiting classes coming in at once. And you're going to see if people thought Nebraska was really young this year, they're going to get really young next year, because you're going to see a lot of guys in there just playing literally out of high school. But that talent gap, you know, if you're looking at what Nebraska has, and I'm sure it's part of everything that you do in that, but them having to close that will be, I don't think they, like maybe it's just my brain, I don't think they were that far off in the talent gap. I think mentally they were a little bit further off than everybody, but it was just something you can't measure. If you bring that up there, you got some guys with confidence and swag. Now you can, that mental game may be a little bit easier to pull along.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to go along with that. I mean, Nebraska wasn't, they were the top 25 as far as the way we view roster talent. They're ranked 23rd or 24th, which was tops in the Big Ten West. But there's a lot to be said about the process where that talent is infused into you, and I know the catchphrase up there for the past few years has been culture, but that's a thing, you know, it's a real thing. If you don't have everybody pulling in the same direction, then it doesn't really matter how many, you know, big time athletes you have up there, it's not going to look right. So you know, get that process another year or so to get involved, and maybe you don't need the experience back there to make things look right.
Yeah, and you know, you saw flashes of it in them being able to incorporate some of their younger guys, you know, in for the four game rule. The ones that stuck out to me, you know, on the defensive line, I thought Ty Robinson looked really good. You know, a big body you can put in there, it's going to take over that defensive tackle or nose guard spot for Darian Daniels. Those guys, it's not they have to be perfect, but when you throw them in against Wisconsin, who has a great offensive line, they can hold their own. That's got to build that kid's confidence up a ton. And to get to that level where your lines are secure has to be where Nebraska has to get to.
Exactly. That's where it all starts. I think, you know, especially as, you know, most of the Nebraska fans, we all know that it starts along the line of scrimmages. I mean, you can take a very average running back and he'll look like an all-star if he's got, you know, five hogs up there that can really move the line of scrimmage and set things. That's where it all has to start. And if you look at our recruiting this last year, there's a lot of good linemen coming in the next year or two. So you know, it's coming along that way. I think it's tracking the right direction. It's just take a little more patience than I think what people anticipated it taking. But it, you know, and we say all this, but you listen to, you know, Bill Moose in the off season, and he said that, you know, the goal is to try to get to 6-6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so maybe he was clued into how hard this was going to be this year and maybe the year after. And I think he tried to tamper expectations a little bit, and it kind of fell on deaf ears, I think, at times.
So now, Adam, as you now you mentioned, so when you said Nebraska was 25 in talent, is that in the country?
Yes. Yep.
So they're the 25th.
Coming into this season was 23rd.
Okay.
So, yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, the talent is in place, and now it's that doesn't account for development. You know, there's teams like Utah and like some of these Iowa is a good example, and even Wisconsin who can take roster talents in the late 30s, low 40s, and they have such a good system in place. They're able to develop these guys to where by the time they're starting as juniors and, you know, redshirt sophomores, they've closed that talent gap.
Is there any way to quantify how long it will take to get your development program? I mean, you'd love to say I come in, I can develop them immediately, right? Probably isn't realistic. Are you looking at like a 3-year, 4-year before you can really start to see some of that development take hold and say, okay, that guy was this when he came in, now he's this. Okay, we can see the development kind of setting in for this team.
Well, yeah, I've kind of tinkered with that a little bit, but it's really hard to quantify because I looked at actually going through and saying, okay, they say X offensive lineman who's 6'4 and 260 pounds coming out of high school, by year three, he's 6'4 and 315. He's put on 50 pounds. Okay, well,
right.
Is that 50 pounds a good weight or is that 50 pounds a bad weight? You know, it's really, really hard to quantify anything like that. Really the best indicator is kind of the star rankings of our star ranking of the athlete that's getting drafted in the NFL draft. Because those guys are doing evaluations, they kind of know who has the athletes and who not and who doesn't. So if you consistently see a program who's taking 2- and 3-star offensive linemen and turning them into first, second, third round draft picks, that's a pretty good indication that strength and conditioning program is pretty healthy. So that's like our Wisconsins and our Iowas and Utahs at times on the defensive line. So. That's maybe one thing that you could look at to be a good indicator. Whereas, you know, the opposite has kind of been true for Nebraska in the last few years and for teams like Tennessee and for teams like that who have more talent than some of the other teams in the division but just can't seem to get over that hump.
Yeah, I asked John Tomlin earlier when we talked to him, and I just wanted to get your opinion on it. If Nebraska is going to pattern themselves after somebody, okay, and you can pick whatever genre you want, scheme, talent, whatever that may be, development, or whoever it is. What's somebody, because this is a copycat league, it's a copycat game, what's somebody Nebraska can kind of copy the model of to get themselves back into relevance in college football?
Well, I think you need to, especially along the lines of the linemen and that area like that, I think you have to look at what Wisconsin has done. I mean, we have very similar athletes in the state of Nebraska, in my opinion, as they do in Wisconsin and some of those regions. Get some of those big boys in there, let them sit a couple of years, put some weight on and develop them, and then play them as juniors and redshirt sophomores. I mean, honestly, this is completely honest here, that was our blueprint first, was it not?
Mm-hmm, correct.
And they kind of took it from Nebraska, and you know, I think it would be kind of silly not to try to, you know, maybe take it back from them. You know, that's when we were successful, when Nebraska was successful. That's kind of how things occurred, and you experienced that firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's if you're going to look at your the development of the offensive and defensive line, I think you have to look at what Wisconsin does for sure and try to emulate close to what they do. We really have had pretty good skill position players, and that really hasn't been the biggest gap. The biggest gap for Nebraska seemed to be along the line.
Yeah. I don't want to inflate people and ego, but if I'm looking at location, and it's probably a bad correlation to draw, with Clemson and their location and Nebraska with our location. But what Dabo Swinney has done is just they weren't very good early on in his tenure. You know, there were people that were ready to be done with him. And then they just kept stuck to their plan, stuck to their beliefs, stuck to all that stuff, and away they went. You know, and now they are where they are, and they've literally earned every single thing they've gotten from this with their development and everything that they've been able to accomplish. But I think that's a realistic thing for Nebraska to do, and maybe that's wishful thinking. I don't know if they'll be able, Nebraska will be able to sustain it the way Clemson has, because there are advantages to being closer to the talent pool in the South. But if you stick to the plan, and I don't want to Philadelphia 76ers this and say stick to the process, but if you follow along with their model, you know, it may not be what we're expecting it to be on the field right now, but the trust, and maybe that's a blind trust by me, but those are things I think they can accomplish down the road, and you can tell me I'm crazy in thinking that.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you look at it, you know, and they have patience with Dabo and that coaching staff up there, and I think one of the things that's lost, especially today in college football, is that patience and that time to really develop a culture and a system. You know, when coaches are under fire to produce in 3 years or they're out the door, what kind of culture are you able to set? You're not really able to set anything from the foundation up, because you have to win now to keep your job. So, and you know, you can only hit that reset button so many times on the machine before the machine just doesn't come back on.
Yes.
So, you know, you have to be patient. I mean, for me, in my coaching evaluations, I don't even look at a coach's results until after he's coached for 4 years. And then I start evaluating a coach.
Really?
Yeah, because if you think about it, that coach is, after 4 years, he's just got his plan set. You know, his plan he started with in year one is now set in motion in year four, because the first building blocks of that plan he set should be in year one and two. So by year three and four, that plan should be complete, and then year five is really the true first, you know, it's his machine at that point.
Yep.
So it's really tough. There are some coaches who have a track record that you know going in that it's going to be a train wreck. Like Willie Taggart was going to be a train wreck from day one at Florida State, just because his track record has shown he's not a great coach. He's, you know, that was going to end in tears for everybody. So, you know it, but for somebody like Frost or like Mike Norvell, who they've just hired at Florida State, they're relatively new coaches, and you need to give them time to switch the culture and switch it to their system before you really start judging what they're doing.
And nobody's good at waiting.
No, absolutely not. especially the fans up in Lincoln. So.
Yeah. it's been a long 20 plus years. It's been a long 22 years for anything up there at Gerald, Nebraska U-Ball. Adam, I'm excited to see what we come up here for bowl season. You've helped me out on even my basic part of the Patreon part of that account. At CFB_professor, if you want to get in there and get the goods. How's your other model doing? You're against the spread model. Still killing it?
It's doing pretty good for all Power 5 teams this year. And end of the year at 55% against the spread for every Power 5, every game involving a Power 5 team. So,
hey, that's winning money. That's winning money. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, thank you, buddy. I appreciate the time. I hope you have a great Monday.
No problem. You too, bud.
Thanks, pal. Adam McClintock there. If you get a chance, follow him. I subscribe to his Patreon. I just do the because of my little stupid model, I use the picks against just straight-up winners. I try to find teams between minus 200 and minus 500. I put six of them together, bet $100 on that, and it's, when it hits, it's pretty good. Not going to lie. He helps me out with those. And I found some guy that bets basketball. It's just got a bunch of directional schools, and they're playing like other directional schools. He's killing it right now. So basketball, even though I hate you, you're helping my non-traditional retirement account, so I appreciate that. But, yeah, get out there and follow the professor. We're going to get out of here real quick. We'll be back for more Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.